Mr. Chairman, I've been listening to these guys gas for over an hour.
And open the subcommittee of the subcommittee. And this afternoon, we are, for the record, we're starting 65 minutes late.
Yes, we are.
And I stampede to apologize to my colleagues from the Senate. My colleagues from the House are out having a stiff one mulligan, so fueling up their nerves following the session. We do appreciate your patience and waiting for us, and particularly Ms. McGlashan is appreciative of the fact that we didn't get started without her. We welcome Sue McGlashan from the Legislative Fiscal Office, and our clerk today is Jamie Penn. Let's proceed with a public hearing, and let's see, can we go ahead with House Bill 2039, a public hearing on 2039 first, and we do have signed up, we're fortunate to have with us today one Commissioner Bill Hansel from Umatilla County, Judge Michael Parker from Sherman County, and Bill Rydell from the AOC staff, and they've even brought along a very excellently prepared professional visual aid. So we welcome you. Please come forward and state your names for the record, and we'll try and hold this whole meeting to 40 minutes so that I can go practice my music for this afternoon. Doctor said it wouldn't be long until I'd have to give up something. He said too much wine room on song, and so I figure I've got one more day to use it.
All right.
No, those are the ones I was going to keep.
Oh, you're keeping those.
Okay. Fun never ends in this committee.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Gail Miguel, Association of Oregon County Staff, accompanied by our past president, Bill Hansel, Unitil County Commissioner, and our current AOC president, Mike McArthur, Sherman County Judge. Bill will start.
We are actually prefer to have the chairman of the governor's committee.
Thank you very kindly. We appreciate your consideration for our colleague. Representative Strobeck, we're honored to have you in our presence today. Representative Strobeck, if you'd like to come forward and testify on behalf of House Bill 2039, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Bill, and the county representatives. For the record, Ken Strobeck, State Representative, Mr. Fitz, Chairman of House Revenue. And this bill comes to you from House Revenue and was supported unanimously from the Revenue Committee, which is a little bit unusual because we do have folks of very different persuasions on that committee when it comes to tax expenditures. But the fundamental thing I want to tell you about 2039 is that we felt in the current era under Measure 5, Measure 47, and 50, where the local governments, especially counties, have less and less flexibility to raise their own funds, that if we're going to be in the position of taking property tax expenditures away from them through the preemption and the various tax credits, that it was only fair for us as a state to share in those decisions that we make rather than taking what we would consider to be a very easy choice to say, fine, we are going to preempt or allow us to take another tax credit to occur, and the counties have to be the ones who end up eating it. And that's why we passed 2039 and felt like it did have an essence of fairness in it, and at least some balance. But if we at the state level are going to be making these decisions, then we need to be sharing in them. It was primarily an effort to have future legislatures stop and think before they pass another tax credit bill that just affects local governments and say, do we really want to do this? If this were affecting us, would we want to do this? And by passing this bill, that's essentially what we do. We can say, this not only affects the local government, but also affects us. So I'd encourage your consideration of it. The other convenient thing for us in this session is that the effective date does not occur until after the biennium for which we're budgeting now, so it does not have a financial impact for the 9901 biennium, but it does put this policy into place, and it does sort of give you that second thought to stop and wait a minute before we just arbitrarily pass another tax reduction or tax credit of some sort that will impact local government.
one question with regard to enterprise zones. Was that discussed in your committee meeting?
Mr. Chairman, I don't recall the specific discussion about enterprise zones as different from other kinds of tax expenditures, but I'm sure that Gil and others from AOC would be able to address that specifically.
Thank you very much.
Senator Crowell
is recognized.
Representative, I think you're absolutely right. We ought to take our time and think about what we're doing when we give make tax changes at the local level or at the state level, for that matter. I guess that one of my hesitations about this, although I think the principle that you're speaking to is a very good principle, is the fact that it will mean that state government will find a level of expenditures it must put out. It has to lock up money in some kind of a fund, and you say we're not doing it this coming biennium, but we will be doing it. I guess I would want to know about how much money would be locked away in that fund for these kinds of things, and whether there would be access to that money if it were not used, because I believe you mean the state government has needs. And the general fund's overcommitted, and there's not enough money to go around, as you know, and that's why we're having this problem at the end of this session. And there's no reason to think what kind of things that will come out of these committees already, the revenue committees, tax expenditures that begin the next biennium. And with Mr. Sizemore around, with another thing coming, that we won't have even worse state problems than now. So that's my problem. As I think about what's happening here, I agree. We need to take a good look at what we do at the local level with these kinds of things, and at the state level, at what we're doing. I'm not sure this really gets added. Already, the state shares in property tax exemptions with the school support part of it, because if they don't pay it, we pick it up and pay it. So we already got that, our involvement with those decisions at the local level, at least for the school portion of the property tax money. So I guess that's my reluctance about this. I know you guys were unanimous in favor of it, and I agree with you. We need to stop and think about what we're doing with this tax system. There's almost an assault on the tax system at every level, including the state level. I'll probably vote this along, but those are my thoughts about it.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chair, Senator Crowell, if I could just respond to a couple of your comments. I think we do have some very good points there. Let me just add that I think we did build in a couple of safety valves on this. First of all, this would only apply to expenditures from the 2001, 2003 biennium forward, so we're not talking about going back and picking up anything and having to budget for that. Secondly, in response to your comment about what would this cost, I think that's the charm of this particular bill. It would only cost whatever the legislative assembly gave away in tax credit.
You wouldn't put the money in the fund up front.
You wouldn't put the money in the fund up front, but what you would do is you would have to budget for it in that particular biennium that was receiving a tax credit, if that was one that was offered.
Okay, so you could do it as you were doing it.
Rolling forward. And
okay.
The other thing is that we have done this with a couple of tax credits that have come out of the House side this time, and that is to make them a local option entirely. And that would be another way of somehow, you know, not having the state share this responsibility. If we said the decision to either extend or not extend a particular tax credit rests solely with the local government. And then the other vehicle for a safety valve is we could always pass a statutory tax credit that was contained in, or notwithstanding such and such provision, we could still do that and override ourselves. Again, the idea was to stop and think before we did this.
Right.
And I know that county people are not going to just let this ride off into the sunset. They'll be back to remind us again and again.
And I'm glad you're not referring to voter locking it in the Constitution.
Right. And I would also just, not to try any turf wars here, but I would like you to compare the revenue and the fiscal report on tax credits from the Senate Revenue Committee compared to the House Revenue Committee this session.
I agree with you.
job. Thank you very much. Yeah, representing Methodist is recognized.
Methodist Church. Well, we're only talking about legislative action that dealt with taxes, property taxes, or are we talking about all legislative action that would affect, in the end, affect taxation?
Sheriff, and if I understand the question correctly, I believe my answer would be that we're only talking about those things that would have to do with the preemption of local taxes, local property taxes, forgiving local property taxes by a state action. And the idea is that since the local property taxes, now limited under Measure 50 to no more than 10% growth, are the primary source of funding for local governments since they don't depend on the income tax. So the principle is that if we, by granting some sort of tax credit that eliminates the ability of a particular entity to pay property taxes or forgive their property taxes, we don't suffer from that. The local government suffers from that.
Follow up, President Michelin.
I guess the other question I'd like to ask is, was there any discussion of other issues? I know the state legislature, at least at one time, had to approve property transfers with federal government, in which the local communities lost the ability to tax when they converted private property to federal land, such as BLM or whatever. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that we have granted that without individual review each time, but it was still a legislative action. So that might be a whole other ballgame.
Yeah.
But I know that's higher on the radar scope of the counties as well.
This bill deals only with actions taken by the state legislature that would be preempting local revenue, potential local revenue.
Are there other questions for Representative Metro? Thank you very much. Thank you. Now we can have Gil and Bill, and it's the Gil and Bill and Mike show.
If you would, please. For the record, I'm Gil Rizal, Food Fish Board and County Staff. I'm with Commissioner Bill Hancock from Minnesota County, past president of the Food Fish Board and County, and current president of the Department of Judge. Bill can start this off, and then Mike will finish our brief comments about the bill.
Thank you very much. As was mentioned, my name is Bill Hansel, and I'm in my 17th year as the Umatilla County Commissioner. I live north of Pendleton in a little farming community of Athena. A couple of years ago, the president of the Association of Oregon Counties and now State Representative Gary Hansen asked me to co-chair an AOC task force to look at the property tax program in Oregon. What you have before you in House Bill 2039 is one of the concepts that came out of this grassroots task force. I have testified before the Interim Senate Republican Budget Committee and also the Governor's Interim Tax Spending Commission. And I believe it has acceptance from all of these different groups as we've presented it. It's a concept, if I may, whose time has come. As was mentioned, House Bill 2039 passed out of the diverse House Revenue Committee on a 9-0 vote. The Association of Oregon Counties strongly supports 2039 as amended, and here's basically what it does. It requires that the state create an account to fund newly adopted or expanded property tax expenditures and permits the state to appropriate monies to that account. They're not obligated to do it, but it sets up the framework to be able to. Provides that the state shall use the account to pay for one half, not the total amount, but up to one half of the losses of revenues to general local governments, including counties, cities, and special districts, of new or expanded property tax expenditures. It delays the effective date to July 1, 2001, so that it has no state budget implications this biennium. It exempts from its operation new or expanded property tax expenditures that include the requirement of a local approval. So if the local governments approve it, we have had a place to table and have an opportunity to express ourselves, and if we've chosen to do that locally, The state has no obligations to participate in that which we have chosen to relinquish.
Would that in fact include enterprise zones, because those are voluntary?
Right. And the other thing about an enterprise zone too is that it's temporary, and it is done by local, but it will come back on the tax rolls after the business is up and running for several years. So it's a little bit different, but it would exempt enterprise zones, as I understand. And it exempts from its operation extensions of existing property tax expenditures that have sunset clauses. So those are kind of the basic ingredients of what House Bill 2039 does. And I'll turn it over to Mike, who will express some of the things of why it's important to us.
Thank you, Bill. For the record, my name is Mike MacArthur, Sherman County Judge. Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would like to turn to the chart that I had some time here to work on.
Please, Judge. I struggle to find my graphic to illustrate the difference between how the property tax system works now in 4750 and the way it used to work. Previously, under our levy-based system, if this pie was, say, an apple pie, and an exemption were granted, an apple taken out of that pie, those apples would be replaced by other apples from representing the tax base. Now, this exemption eliminates one of those tax base things. That person doesn't have to pay. But we'll get more apples now from the other trees to fill in the hole. So the size of the pie, that is the revenues and the services those revenues provide to the local government, stay the same. That's previous to measure 4750. Now, under the rate-based system, measure 4750, when those apples are removed from the pie, there's nothing there to replace it because it's fixed. Our rate's fixed. So services, there's a real loss to revenues and services for local government and the services that they provide. I hope that's a rough estimation or a rough explanation, but the best way I can show you the differences, why this is now more important to local government. In terms of the fairness of the idea that if property tax exemptions are granted, local government needs to play a role in that. And if it is indeed good public policy that a property tax exemption be granted, the source should be from the person doing, or the body doing the granting. That's our point. Or at least there should be some sharing of the burden of granting the property tax, particularly given the financial circumstances that local governments find themselves in. Mr. Chair, I would cross.
This graph is worth 1,000 words. Do any of you know this time, if this were in effect, what the state share of making up for the intangible tax exemption would be? How much would the state be paying?
Chair, I've seen a number of different figures, and I frankly can't recall. I don't have it in front of me. I can't recall what the final figure is, the general government's recovery. I would want to point out a couple of things. The principal importance of this.
Mike, can you get to my question? Is it possible?
I just
want to know what would it cost the state? What was the total hit on the counties with the intangible tax?
I'm sorry, I don't recall the figures.
We have them, but I don't have them.
That's substantial, isn't it?
Yes.
Several millions of dollars? 20? I just wonder, you know, if we're going to be sharing this. It's not in effect now, but it would be quite good. Maybe we'd be less reluctant to do things like the intangible tax thing if we were sharing it. So I think it would have at least it would cause us to ponder. But you don't have any idea.
Other questions for? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
This measure is only meant to deal with issues that we as a legislative body.
Issues that we deal with as a legislative body that we actually create
tax credits, tax issues that create revenue loss for you. Is that correct? It, Mr. Chair, if I may, please follow up.
It would not apply to a measure 4750 situation that's voted on by the people. Correct?
Sure.
That's correct. That is correct. Okay. Thank you.
One more follow-up in that regard, if I may. If the intangibles were forced upon us by a lawsuit,
No, it would not. Simply tax expenditures that are adopted by the legislature, and it would be, again, this share based on how much money you have appropriated to your fund.
Okay.
Could I, Chair, no mention has been made of the Dash 2 amendment. Our comments take into account the Dash 2 amendment to be adopted by this subcommittee, by the committee. These were agreed to between us and the House Revenue Committee, but they were anxious to get this bill moving, so they left the balance of the amendments to the full committee. The Dash 2 amendments that you have moved the effective date to 2001. And then provide two exceptions to the operation of this program. One where there's a local sign-off on the expenditure. The other where there's simply an extension of a sunset date on a current exemption. That also would not kick this program into effect. So we've agreed to the Dash 2 amendment. I would ask you to adopt them.
Thank you. Certainly, Representative Strobeck's testimony included the Dash 2 amendments relative to the implementation date of July 1st, 2001.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
you asked a question earlier that I was hoping they could answer regarding enterprise loans. What impact would this have on enterprise loans?
Mr. Chairman, it would not have any impact at all because enterprise zones, as they come in, require a local sponsorship and sign-on, and that's specifically exempted.
Chair?
Yes.
Even though they are allowed by either statute or rule in the state of Oregon, which in a sense is what this bill gets at ultimately, I think, you still don't feel that would qualify for reimbursement under this particular act?
It would. My understanding is it would not, because you have a local jurisdiction agreeing to that.
Agreeing to that. Okay.
And that exempts it out. Plus, with an enterprise zone, even unlike some of the other exemptions that are granted, it's only temporary, and it will come back on the tax rolls within a specific period of time, depending upon what the agreed date was.
That's true.
So it's not a permanent.
Okay, do you all have copies of the A2 amendments dated 5/20/99? Representative Leonard is recognized.
Are these A2 amendments substantive? Will affect the fiscal impact?
They will affect the fiscal impact in that they delay the fiscal impact. We have a letter in legislative fiscal's possession authorizing on behalf of the House Revenue Committee, and I understand it's enacted actually by the co-chair. It just delays the implementation date into the next biennium.
Including 7-5, line 9 through 11.
Sure, if it would be helpful, I could go through the Dash 2 amendments quickly. The first couple of lines move the effective date to July 1, 2001. On lines 6 through 11, there are two additional exemptions for the operation of this program. Subsection 4 there says that any local... subsection 4 says that if there is a property tax expenditure of the law now that is sunsetting, and the sunset is simply moved forward a couple of years or however long, then this program won't kick in. The legislature will not be
asked to help fund that. Subsection 5 is the exemption for the local, if the local taxing district has the authority to sort of sign off on it. So you see, for example, in a couple of housing bills that have come out of the revenue committees, those tax expenditures must be approved by local jurisdictions. In that instance, this program doesn't take effect either.
Please, Ms. Gash.
I would also add that on page 3 of the printed bill, that sections 5 and 6 would be deleted by these amendments that remove the appropriation clause. The bill would still allow the establishment of the property tax expenditure funding account, but there would be no appropriation to that.
So, subparagraph 5 of section 2. Basically authorizes the account, the local taxing district account, exemption account to be set up, but it is not funded at all. Is that correct, Mr. Fleischman?
The section that sets up that would be section 3 on page 2 of the bill, I believe.
Okay, and legislation, and immediately before 3 is inserted 4 and 5 under subsections, under section 2, after subsection 3.
Yeah. And those are the ones that, the first one deals with exempting from this bill those extensions of existing property tax expenditures with sunset clauses, and the second one exempts those property tax expenditures that would include the requirements of local approval.
Then I gather that with covered within the bill would be certain kinds of prescriptions, like, for instance, the cities. We say you may not have a real estate transfer tax. Do we then owe them anything because we're telling them they can't do that?
Chairman Secretary, no. That's a separate issue.
That's a separate issue.
If these are specifically defined as property tax expenditures rather than preemptions.
So preemptions of... We're not doing anything about that.
Authority, that's right. We of course, would like you to, but not
Senator Lemon recognized.
That would be sincere, but one of the areas maybe where legislature tries to pass certain bills affecting local property tax, it could be affecting some couple hundred dollars to a couple thousand or more. If it's a larger amount, it's okay, but a small amount, a couple thousand dollars, try to figure out what it is, how much it is, that the revenue department might be a headache. And we need to have a certain kind of a threshold. Did we hear from the suspension committee on that particular issue?
Chairman Senator Lynn, that specific issue wasn't discussed, but I hasten to point out that there is an opportunity for the legislature, if it decides that there's just nuisance, a sort of nuisance value exemption that applies to maybe one or two specific properties. You can do that notwithstanding this law. If you make this law, you could pass a bill saying notwithstanding this law, the exemption is granted, and then this program wouldn't operate.
But there is no subversion here at all in this bill.
Then
it might be conflict each other. Then who is going to have all the rights that the power?
Chair Senator Lim, the later bill, since they're both statutes, the later bill would override the earlier one. So you could, future legislatures could adopt expenditures and simply say, notwithstanding this program, we adopt this expenditure. And get around the question that you have about nuisance, the smaller exemptions that really aren't worth the administrative effort to fund.
Mr. Chair, for long of if they do that, then every bill there passing, they might put the language there to override this year.
May I say this, Senator? Yeah. So probably what would happen is that we would probably very seldom ever take action as a legislature on single pieces of property that in other words, it would be large uniform kinds of transactions that are statewide that I believe that the associations, the League of Oregon Cities and the other local taxing districts that would be damaged as a result of the action that we take. I think that's okay.
I understand what you're saying, but if I give you the examples, maybe some she's taken buildings.
Yes.
Maybe one day, you know, throughout the state, we are giving them tax exemption. That will affect their local tax revenue.
And then they would
then
say,
keep them not long.
Yeah, and then they would say, notwithstanding the effects of House Bill 2039 from the 1999 legislature. In other words, they would exempt it from that. For a single property like that.
I hope that's clear, like you said, but I do see that language in the deal.
Okay. Thank you. Senator, is recognized.
I was wondering how we would compute what we would owe to the counties or the cities, let's say counties, for one half of the losses of revenue if we gave a certain kind of tax exemption or whatever it was that we did that lost them money. We already pick up the school costs, okay? We wouldn't be paying double on those, right? Those would be factored in, so we wouldn't be doing that, okay?
Sure.
So you'd figure out the total amount of loss, but if the state's formula is going to pick up the losses of property taxes for the school, that wouldn't be part of it.
Sure, Senator. So the concept is that the Department of Revenue, and if the assessors would know the rate, Department of Revenue would estimate the value of the exemption. The program would apply only to local general government, not the state. So the 50% would be on losses to those local general governments.
It wouldn't apply to the schools at all.
Further questions for the representative from the League of Oregon Cities, League of Oregon Counties, Association of Oregon Counties, representing all the taxpayers out there and special districts as well. I beg your pardon. Any further questions?
Not a question, just a comment to thank you and welcome you for being here. I know from my days working with the Association of Oregon Counties, a great deal of work and thought has went into this process. And glad we brought it forward.
Mr. Chair, the one I just discussed, even though that language is not in the deal, it will include in the budget note, at least that might satisfy some of the things I'm concerned with. Because that is later future, the law is law, we have to keep according to the law to that.
We won't have a legislative fiscal report on this, our actual budget note, Senator Lynn, but for the record, your concern is that as to single specific properties that might be exempted by an action of the legislature in the future, that would be in effect after July 1st, that would reduce a property tax on a specific property after July 1st, 2001, that would be a very difficult and time-consuming issue, and your concern is that those kinds of single transactions should provide that it would be that those actions should be taken stipulating, notwithstanding this 1999 law. Would that be adequate? Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Braille is recognized.
I have a sort of a concern, and that is that I think the case that's made by the counties is an excellent case, and it's an accurate one. The exemption does cost the counties money, and it's more in terms of a tax shift than it is any other thing. And the loss of those revenues is serious. And the real reduction that's been achieved, I think, meets the goal of some of the folks that were the proponents of 47 and 5. And I don't know if anybody talked about this, but both of those measures failed in rural Oregon. Most of the folks in the districts that I represent and in the districts that our rural legislators represent know the value of the support that those programs and those institutions receive from local tax base. That's why we vote the local districts in. And they also know the value of the dollars that flow to those programs from the state. To cure the problem, we'll reactivate the coalition that put 5 and 47 forward. Because the coalition that put 5 and 47 forward, the Measure 50, the rewrite, we're looking for a real reduction in taxes. And, you know, that is what they accomplished with the constitutional mandate for real reduction, not shift. And we've, it's like balancing on a bongo board, you know, you get pushed one way and you have to throw your feet the other, and we've tried to do the best we could do, and there's been some recovery in 5, and the rewrite in 47 to 50 is an attempt to get some equity. I'm concerned that if we solve the problem, which I think we need to do, that we, in the solution, are the seeds of another initiative. And I just wondered if I think there's a lot of political wisdom sitting at the table, and I'd like to hear them explain and tell me how solving this problem doesn't reactivate the same coalition that harmed rural Oregon. Because it did.
Thank you very much, Senator. Judge McArthur?
Sure, thank you. Senator Fairley is correct in his analysis, I believe. And I think that this bill is a way to forestall any further attacks to the property tax system. Because as that piece gets larger, it puts additional pressure on local government to go back to the voters to try and find additional revenues through the property tax system. If we replace that missing piece with income tax dollars, then local government isn't in the position of having to go back to the well, so to speak, and put more pressure. We don't put the pressure on the property taxpayers that brought us the property tax reduction measures. So I think this is part of that support for this bill 2039 is part of that cure and part of that part of keeping us from having further initiatives that would reduce property taxes and further impact both local and state sources.
Representative Hansen, did that answer your question, Senator?
Mr. Chairman, it helps. I think we could have quite a discussion on the implications. I hear that little voice in the back of my head saying, well, there you go again. You know, we passed a constitutional amendment. We did it twice. You didn't get the message. You're not listening. But, you know, you're figuring out strategies around these tax problems. That voice gets louder toward election time. The other thing is that many of our rural communities will go back if they need to, but most of them are already compressed. And so there's no going back anyway. They're already under compression, and there's no squeak in any of the special districts or the total district in raising the income tax to backfill the revenue loss. I'm just concerned taxpayers united and the other groups that we've seen come at this process don't make much of a distinction between property or income taxes. The taxes
is the tax number.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just one question in that regard to the compression issue. Are there any counties in the state of Oregon that don't have cities that are in compression? Does every county have some cities in compression?
My county has every city in compression.
Are there any counties that don't have any cities in compression?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. The legislative revenue office would be able to answer that question more accurately. I think we're a secondary source rather than primary source, but I would not be surprised at all if there weren't at least one city in every county in compression.
I think that what Senator Ferraioli said and was echoed by Judge McArthur from Sherman County is really the case, and that is that in the rural counties, we're all in compression. I mean, we're absolutely in the cities. We're absolutely at the nth dollar. And that is a major concern. So, Representative Hansen is recognized.
Well, I just wanted to have a comment. I think that Judge MacArthur is very charitable when he said, when we reduce the taxes, I think what he meant was, he used the wrong pronoun, it's when you, when we, the legislature, grant an exemption that reduces their tax base, that creates the pressure to go back out to the voters for an override or to try and go to the property tax in some other way in order to try and make up for that amount that the legislature felt in the best interest of the state should be exempted. And I think this is real sound policy. If the legislature thinks it's in the best interest of the state, the legislature should help shoulder the burden and the cost of that action.
Are there any other questions?
I have one more question. Last question.
Yes, sir.
Last question. And there must be a reason why they prompted this deal. I'd like to know if you have some information that your last biennium, how much that your local property has been affected by the passage of the legislation. Any idea of the total number of dollars?
Chairman Senator Lynn, the Department of Revenue produces a tax expenditure report every biennium. And it's about that thick, and it shows that the number of exemptions, called expenditures, the special assessments, also called expenditures, that have been granted over time, statutory references to them, and the dollar figures are memory doesn't serve at this point, but there is more property off the roll, off the tax roll, than there is on the tax roll.
Is that?
Yes.
That through federal?
If that includes federal and state property, local public property, but also private property as well.
And the reason that the private property, the primary reason that private property is off the roll at this point?
Is through legislative action. Special assessments and exemptions.
Well, Mr. Chair, one follow-up question. Is this just average compared to the other state, or do we have more in our state compared to any other?
So, Mr. Chairman, if I may, and looking at the figures, there are billions of dollars in exemptions currently. Some of it go back to territorial days. Churches, fraternal organizations, I mean, you can go on and on. We're not in any way, shape, or form suggesting that any of those come back on. We're just basically saying, you know, from a particular point on, if there's exemptions. We didn't, at least in the committee, we didn't compare much with other states other than just peripherally, and I think we're somewhat common. I think churches, for example, in all states are exempt, fraternal organizations, charitable organizations, this type of thing. One of the things that some of you may be familiar with the concept of PILT, payment in lieu of taxes, that the federal government provides to local jurisdictions, say, like Mount Hurd County, I think is 80%, 90% owned by the federal government. So, and they pay no taxes on the property taxes. So the concept as we evolved it out of committee was along this type of thing, and I used the acronym somewhat facetiously that it was PILE. We had PILT from the federal government, PILE, payment in lieu of exemptions. But same type of concept that we wanted to bring forward. I'm sorry, we don't have all through the work of the committee, we had all these facts and figures as we worked in the last couple of years, and I didn't bring any of them with me.
That's good enough.
Thank you very much. We'll move into work session then on House Bill 2039. Representative Hansen moves the adoption of the A-2 amendment. Are there any objections to the additions of the A-2 amendment? Hearing none, we will go ahead and adopt the A-2 amendment to House Bill 2039. Any further discussion relative to 2039? Mr. Gashin, would you like to make any recommendation or comments on behalf of Legislative District Office.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I just point out to you that this bill is estimated to have a minimal fiscal impact on the Department of Revenue of about $50,000.
Okay.
This plan?
Representative Leonard is sending staff to amend the report of the bill. It would be.
This is for subsidies. Yeah. Doesn't become go into effect until buying in the way.
It doesn't work.
Doesn't include just buying.
No, it does not.
So the intangibles or whatever else we're doing this time won't be included.
Understanding that there's a model to, and I assume that would be the accountability for exactly what we do when we have the fiscal impact on any hospital. They have, would have. It would show the amounts that would be subject to refund to the impressed or impound account for 50% of the amount of property tax revenues which would be lost to city, county, and special districts.
I've mixed feelings about this. I really do. I think that the message that everybody says they want to send about these tax expenditures affecting local government revenues is a good message to send. My problem with the bill is that it brings state governments. Now we're making some at the legislature. We're making some of those decisions that cost them property tax revenues. No question about that. And they're up here resisting that, telling us why we ought not to do that, and so forth. If the state becomes a partner in that, it may well be that they won't be so eager in resisting what we're doing here. And we're just opening up another artery into the general fund and allowing tax shifts.
But it was only half of it.
It's half of it, but still, if you just do the intangibles, that's $13 million to $29 million, if we picked up half of it, that's a load. That's a load. Now, will the fact that we're picking up half of it increase their opposition to it or decrease it? If they're picking up all of it, they're going to be especially alarmed. If we're picking up half of it, I'm not sure that doesn't make it less easy to resist. Now, obviously, we've got our budget problems. We ought to really be thinking about those budget problems because we can't afford a lot of it. I think we ought to quit doing this, giving all these tax breaks that affect local government, but nonetheless are. And so just keep that in mind. We don't want to be opening up an artery here. I want to vote for them because I think they've got a legitimate beef. They really do. They got a legitimate beef with us. But at the same time, I don't want to open up another artery into the general fund. We got enough of them already. I'll probably vote for it, but I may vote against it on the floor.
Thank you very much, Joe, for that expression. Representative Hanson moves full passage then with, as Ann goes with the dash, two amendments of the House Bill 2039. Are there any objections in the committee to pass this with a due pass to the full committee?
I'm going to vote no.
Note for the record that Representative Leonard votes no. Any other opposition?
I may vote no in the full committee.
Representative,
I will vote for it this time to show my support for the
inquiry. Thank you.
I do think they got a legitimate.
Senator Crow will vote yes with that clarification.
Mr. Chair, I think it's a good deal, and there are only things in the future legislature should be more careful.
Very, very much so.
Now,
I think in deference to Senator Crow, I think that they still wouldn't like to be dealing with 50-cent pieces as opposed to full dollar bills, and I think that they'll probably come after us for the full 50-cent piece as well to keep us from getting into the pocket. With the one vote of Representative Leonard, we will pass House Bill 2039 to the full committee with due pass recommendation. So ordered, and let's see. Representative Hanson to take care of that on the floor?
Since I made both of the motions, I'd be glad to.
Good. Excellent. Let's see. To the full Ways and Means, Senator Ferriola shaking his head while he left, and would you like to carry it to the floor as well?
Sure.
No problem with that. Thank you very much, Senator. Did you get another one named there?
Wonderful.
Thank you very much. We thank you for your participation here. Thank you very kindly. We'll now open the public hearing on House Bill 1081. We have Amy Sackler from the Legislative Fiscal Office. Jamie Penn continues as our clerk today. And 1081, we have the Mr. Grover Simmons signed up. Thank you for coming today, Mr. Simmons.
Thank you, sir. My name is Grover Simmons. I represent the Independent Employer Association and the Pacific Printing and Imaging Association. Thank you very much for hearing this bill, Senate Bill 1081. I'd like to jump over to the final point I want to make in this whole presentation is that this bill has no fiscal impact. And I just procedurally explain how we kind of got there. When it was introduced on the Senate side, the bill dealt with the specialty deputy program for electrical inspectors. The bill was amended on the Senate side to not deal with special deputy inspectors, but with electrical specialty code inspectors. And the difference is this new bill doesn't involve hiring any new employees. So the cost impact went from, I think, $120,000 or something down to zero. I believe your staff lady, Mr. Sexton, will give you, maybe she's already handed that out. Anyway, the punchline is there's no fiscal impact. And the bill is a consensus bill supported by the administrator of the electrical department and also the state chief electrical inspector, Mr. Gary Wilson. Now, having said that, I haven't even talked about the problem that's involved here. If you wish some background on that, it'd be my pleasure to talk about it.
Can I just briefly visit with the committee? I've had an opportunity to briefly visit with Mr. Simmons, and this bill comes out of some specialized printing equipment. It comes from Europe. It comes to the United States. It's sold in all parts of the United States. State of Oregon's a unique situation with the building codes, particularly the electrical portion of building codes, provides that certain equipment have to have underwriter's laboratory label for a certain amount of this to be done. To be sold, certain amount of this to be sold and actually utilized in the United States. However, the codes, the equipment meets all of the various codes, and in the city of Portland, the city of Portland took the position that they had to have a special deputy that would come in and examine for fitness the equipment. That the equipment, if it did not bear the underwriter seal, the underwriter laboratory seal, that this equipment would be subject to very specialized provisions, and Oregon, through the city of Portland, would have to open up a whole new division of the code relative to specialized printing. Now, the Gutenberg press came from over in that part of the world, and they're famous for their presses, and so a lot of the presses that we use internationally come from Europe, and what's happened is that because of this rather unique situation that cropped up in Portland, this machinery and equipment could not be imported and sold in particularly in Portland, because all of the other inspectors statewide could see that the three-phase and so forth was wired properly, and it's wired for every other state in the nation, but they felt like that they wanted to have this additional assurance. And I may not have gotten the facts exactly straight, but upon reexamination by Mr. Brewer, then we came back to the fact that this is really not applicable, that New Jersey wasn't the place that should be telling it how to run the printing presses that were used in the city of Portland, and eventually there was acquiescence and definitive opinion that this was correct, that we could continue to accept foreign printing presses in the United States with this without the underwriter laboratory seal on it, as long as it was wired according to international code. So are there any objections to that testimony being offered? Mr. Brewer has sent a letter to us indicating the division's approval of the bill, and maybe we can go ahead and have Ms. Sexton right now tell us about the first legislative fiscal office analysis and the subsequent analysis of
the bill.
That's Senator Leonard.
If it is here that the page 2, that line first, the inspection under this subsection may recover the cost associated with the inspection. And it seems to me how much they can recover. And yes, it seems like an open end. And
which section is that? I'm on page 2.
Of page 2, this is line 1.
The very first verse. Yeah. Okay, subject to ORS 479845, a city or county that administers a program or field inspection under this subsection may recover the cost associated with the inspection of an inspection report. And that is currently the law. And, well, let's see, is that currently?
Well, it is law.
That's added.
Yeah,
that's specifically added with regard to this particular equipment. And I think, would you like to respond to that?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Mr. Glenn. There have been joint meetings between the industry, the printing industry, if you will, and the chief electrical inspector and the administrator and other inspectors. And industry has agreed to pick up the cost of this inspection program willingly. And as a result of that, the chief electrical inspector will put on a series of programs, seminars, and training sessions for industry to teach us how to comply with this electrical code in Oregon and not have the difficulties we've had over the years. So industry is willing to underwrite the cost of this inspection program. Now, frankly, that's a wonderful trade-off, because under the current system, without this inspection program operating well, we as an industry are forced to use outside third-party labs, testing labts. And in Graphic Arts Center's case, they paid $15,000 for an outside third-party lab. The Portland Bakery, $6,000. Oregon Catholic Press, $4,000. And Foreman Douglas in Beaverton, $2,500. So this bill will, by and large, it doesn't completely eliminate, but it almost eliminates the necessity of using these outside third-party inspection labs or testing labs, and the inspectors themselves will be retrained and upgraded, the same current personnel, and they're relabeled here, renamed, and the cost of those inspections will be recovered by the fee system, which industry is perfectly happy to pick up. Thank you for the question.
Happy to do that.
Yes, we are.
Thank you.
Because it's cheaper than the outside third-party lab instead.
Okay.
Representative
Nelson, thank you, Mr. Chair. On the letter we received from Mr. Brewer, the last paragraph, pretty vague. The number of representatives doesn't define the board. Do you have any clarification to the committee on what he's talking about?
Did you receive anything again? Just referring to the existing, they're talking about their existing staff, aren't they? Establishes rules for the special field inspections, and the special field inspections are what they presently are willing to pick up locally. at each installation, are they not?
Mr. Chair, my reading of the last paragraph of Mr. Brewer's memo that says that they are recommending approval of the bill, provided that the representatives of the affected industry, and perhaps Mr. Simmons can address this, are members of the electrical and elevator board steering committee that sets up the rules for these special field inspections. So I believe what he's asking is to be certain that as the rules are developed, that the people who are going to be affected by it are participants in that process, so that the rules are clearly drawn to address their concerns, since this appears to have been a large collaborative effort.
Mr. Chair, that is the correct point, is that when Mr. Gary Wilson, the state electrical inspector, was in California, he had a program in place, and he's going to use that as the model up here, and to implement that will take some administrative rule writing. And he simply invited industry to be a party to the rule writing, which was a good invitation. We really feel welcome and a party to solving this matter. So his letter was a way of saying the industry has been invited to participate as a full partner. We accepted that, and he's going to be putting on training sessions for industry. So it's a good conclusion.
That is all your concern, Mr. Chair.
Okay, just follow up, Mr. Chair. I think from the comment then that Mr. Brewer is the one that appoints the committee. And that is controlled to this department.
Mr. Chair, and representative, I believe the electrical and elevator board appoints the committee, and Joe Brewer is the administrator only. I don't think he appoints the committee. I believe it's appointed by the elevator board. I'm not certain about that, but I believe that's the way it would operate.
There wouldn't be any situation where as industry began basically to pay for its own regulation, that there would be a lessening of the intensity or the effectiveness of the regulation.
Mr. Chair and Senator Crow, I don't believe that will result from this at all. Actually, in 1981, the legislature addressed this whole problem and exempted industrial electrical equipment from having to have a UL label. But nevertheless, the equipment still had to meet the National Electrical Safety Code. So from 81 till about a year ago, there was no problem. But about a year ago, the inspectors in Portland, if you will, started red tagging heavy industrial equipment again. They say, how do we know it meets the national code? And it just got stickier and stickier. And so, and these third party testing labs were brought in, and that's where the cost occurred. And that's what we're trying to address. Just by way of one example that is pretty severe, I mentioned the Oregon Catholic Press. They had, they paid already a $4,000 tab for this outside inspector, and they expect a final bill, an invoice of another $4,000. But the problem is they had 8 million books to run through a new perfect binder that had cost $1,500,000, manufactured in Germany, brought to Portland without a red tag, and it couldn't be actuated. The power couldn't be turned on, and it became a big Donnybrook. Well, so they went through the outside inspection and finally got it up and running. But in the meantime, they had to subcontract out $1,200,000 of those books. So the lost profit and the inspection fees, they will have lost $46,000. So we just feel as we're warranted in coming to the legislature like we did in 1981, saying, please clear it up. And I'm really pleased with the way it's turned out, because we have a chief electrical inspector and an administrator who are really supportive of an understanding of the industry's problems and want to help us solve them. So I think it's a good bill.
Thank you very much. Representative Hanson.
Chair, thank you. You said that consensus has been arrived on this bill. In my opinion, that would all include all electrical contractors in the city of Portland.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, I'm not positive it includes all electrical inspectors, but Gary Wilson...
Electrical contractors.
Electrical contractors. Mr. Wilson has been in touch with the electrical inspectors, where there was some concern by the chairman of the elevator board in the first hearing, but that has now gone away when they went to this new language and they weren't trying to hire any new employees. They're going to keep the same employees and retrain them and upgrade them, and therefore no cost impact. Well, all those people, those being the electrical inspectors, to my understanding, throughout the state have signed on to the thing. And I've talked with some of the electrical contracting companies, and they support the bill as well. Now, that's not very many. We don't know very many of those, but those who are most active in the field accept the bill.
The city of Portland is...
Yes, the city of Portland has signed on to it, which is wonderful and a miracle.
Okay, we'll now go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 1081, and we'll move into work session on House Bill 1081. Let's turn to Crystal, Ms. Sexton.
Mr. Chair and subcommittee members, there is no adjustment to the measure that needs to be done. The recommendation would be to refer it to the full committee with the DuPass amendment, if that is your wish.
I'm going to move it to the full committee with a DuPass recommendation. Are there any objections? Seeing none, we will pass it to the full committee with a DuPass recommendation. I'll go ahead and carry that to the House. Representative Hansen, you want to carry that to the House?
Full consensus and no cost. No cost in fact. I can see why the chair wants to carry it.
It's a great bill. I mean, it's got to be a 55-2 bill if I've ever seen one.
55-1.
55-1. Okay. You're on. Yeah. And on the Senate side, Senator Lynn. Thank you very much. We will. For the record, Senator Ferrioli voted aye, as well as Representative Kraft.
So. Indeed. Mr. Chairman, a little unanimous. You can vote my proxy anytime you want.
Thank you. We will go
anytime.
And we'll go ahead and take care of that in full committee. Thank you very much.
Oh.
Thank you, George. Appreciate you.